Did you know that what happens in your state legislature affects your daily life, liberty, and property just as much as what happens in the White House? Maybe even more. How will you decide which down-ballot candidates deserve your vote on November the 5th? Resist being swayed by emotional campaign ads and soundbites. Visit iVoterGuide for the facts about the state legislative candidates on your ballot so that you can think for yourself. Election Day is Tuesday, November the 5th. Vote wisely with iVoterGuide.com. That's iVoterGuide.com.
Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today. Let's see. Tim's out. Wesley's out. Fred Jackson is out. Ray Pritchard is out. So I really had to scrape the bottom of the barrel and invite Tony Vitagliano back on. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning. Good to be back.
Tony is my son, and he's very knowledgeable. I think if you've heard him on before, folks, we're trying to build our bench. Okay, so Tony's like our
I'm deep in the bench.
He's our utility infielder. When we got a lot of people out, we go, Tony, whatever you're doing, drop it and come on the air. So anyway, Tony was available. Thanks for being on. And then Chris Woodward, of course, our news guy today.
Good morning.
At least for the first hour. He's a regular. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Steve will be here if the Lord tarries in the next hour.
Yeah, folks, this is Chris's. Chris says this.
No man knoweth the hour.
That's right. He says, if the Lord tarries. And in fact, he had devotions this morning before the staff and managed to work that in.
I did.
You know, so if the Lord tarries, it's
I'm in the process,
in the Bible.
Keep watching the show on Facebook because I'm in the process of putting together a shirt that says, if the Lord tarries.
If the Lord tarries. You're in the process
of putting together. If the Lord tarries, I will make that and wear it on this show.
Well, you certainly have the spirit of it. What do you mean you're in the process of making one?
I gotta like buy the T-shirt and then
by hand,
use the
knitting,
Cricut machine,
knitting the fabric.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know. I'm gonna make it.
You're gonna make it. You're in the process of thinking about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have it in my head. I have a plan.
I've always said never underestimate the importance of planning. Mm-hmm. I try to tell my wife that during the summer when she wants me to do some yard work. I tell her from my recliner, never underestimate the importance of planning out what you're going to do next Saturday.
Better write that down.
Yeah, write that down. All right, Chris, what is going on in America?
Yes.
But there's more than one way to answer that question.
So
what's your top news story?
We are 2 weeks away from the presidential election. You might have heard about that. We talk about it from time to time on this here program.
Yep.
Yesterday, we spent a lot of time on the show talking about polling data, specifically in battleground states where news outlets like Real Clear Politics seem to think that Donald Trump is leading Kamala Harris when it comes to the important battleground states. Matter of fact, Real Clear Politics thinks that if the election were today, Trump would win the election based on the Electoral College vote. We have a ton of clips today to talk about a number of things involving the election. But for a minute, I want to take some time and go over some stuff that both candidates said yesterday on the campaign trail. Let's begin with this one. One of the things that former President Donald Trump has long said is that if I'm elected and brought back into the White House, I'm going to do away with things like the gender manipulation of minors, and we're not going to have males and female sports. Those are big issues that we have long covered on AFN.net. And to prove that Donald Trump did say this, I've got some audio. Who, by the way, he's not a fan of critical race theory or CRT either. Clip one.
On day one, I will sign an executive order banning schools from promoting critical race theory or transgender insanity. I will keep men out of women's sports. I will sign a law banning child sexual mutilation in all 50 states. Won't happen anymore.
Now, those comments were made in Battleground, North Carolina yesterday.
Okay, and North Carolina's had a history of battling these kinds of issues. Mm-hmm. There was a big dust-up, I don't know if it was 8 years ago, whatever, over they had a bathroom bill up in North Carolina.
Yeah.
So this issue has been percolating, if you will, in North Carolina for a long time. Tony, I'm just going to say this, that we've noted the growing power of the executive branch. I'm not sure exactly, politically speaking, historically speaking, when this started, but certainly with President Obama, who said, hey, listen, I have a pen. I can sign an executive order. But and it, so President Trump did it. Joe Biden did it. Former President Trump is now saying if he's reelected, he'll do it. I'm not sure this is the way the founders intended for policies to be enacted. And honestly, I'm not sure how much the president constitutionally can do. But we do have a Department of Education that frankly sticks its nose into what happens in public schools across the country. So I guess if you're running the executive branch, you can at least do that.
Yeah, if you will pardon the phrase, sometimes you're just left to play with the hand that you're dealt.
Yeah,
I think that's where we're at with our government and the way it's functioning as far as the executive branch goes. So we've rarely over the past two decades really had in a full alignment of all the branches of government. So both the House and the Senate and the presidency being lined up in uniform, which is where you could get a lot of these laws. And for instance, on the gender reassignment, you know, the trans men and women sports, those issues where you could get that type of legislation pushed through and enacted. So now we're just kind of left with this precedence of the executive branch being in charge of legislation, I guess by fiat, executive fiat, legislating these rules. And I think it was smart of Donald Trump to mention this in North Carolina, because I don't know if everybody realizes there's a lot of sports is a big deal in North Carolina, just like it is in most states in the U.S. But you've got Duke, you've got UNC, you've got some big schools there.
Yeah.
And college sports especially is big. So him wanting to make that a point, that's one of the issues he's going to take up, I do think that was smart. Yes, unfortunate that we have to rely on the presidency to do that through executive orders, but he's just kind of doing the best that he can.
Well, and in fact, the very existence of these huge bureaucracies that are not, I'm not going to say they're completely unconstitutional, but I don't think the founding fathers conceived of these huge bureaucracies that have one foot in the legislative branch and one foot in the executive branch.
Right.
So Congress technically has oversight, for example, over the Department of Education in terms of funding. And then the executive branch, these things are under the executive branch. So these kind of bridge whatever gaps there are in between the executive and the legislative branch. So it's really a hybrid. These are hybrid institutions that Congress created because Congress grabbed too much power from the states and tried to run everything from Washington, D.C. And like you said, now we're stuck with the reality of it, and that's what President Trump is dealing with when he's making promises like this.
And I think that's why you are starting to see or hear the rumblings and the talk of the current administration about fortifying, you know, passing, seeing what they can do to fortify some of these departments in preparation of a possible Trump presidency, who might come in and make serious reforms to some of these departments that are just out of control, like the Department of Education and others like that. So I think that's kind of why you're starting to see them talk about that. What can we do to make sure that Trump can't, you know, dismantle the Department of Education or make serious reforms at the Department of Justice or the Department of Agriculture or, you know, the EPA. So I think that's why another result of that.
Well, and when you're talking about Robert F. Kennedy Jr. coming in, let's make America healthy again.
Correct.
Okay. Well, if we're getting
that makes the FDA's ears perk up,
absolutely.
Right?
You know. So is Donald Trump going to turn RFK Jr. loose to completely deconstruct, reconstruct, however you want to term it, some of these huge agencies that oversee health in America and big pharma and so on and so forth. So there is a lot that could happen in a Trump presidency. And the deep state, as President Trump found out in 2016,
right,
the deep state don't play.
Mm-hmm. No.
I mean, they want to protect their turf. And so it would make sense that they would look to the Democratic Party to try to fortify their position to resist whatever Trump wants to do in his 4 years, because basically then it becomes a waiting game. We think we can outwait you.
That's right.
And hope for a Democrat to come in to shore up. Anyway, it is a fascinating time to be alive as we watch what's happening in America, these kind of shifting winds.
Yeah.
So
now the gender stuff is it's resonating with voters in North Carolina, but also people in states like New York, where I've got audio here from a mom by the name of Natalia Marakver, if I said her name correctly. She's a mom and a former Democrat in New York that's been put off by Dems pushing the gender stuff here. Clip two.
Why are they fighting for gender reassignment surgery for children who can't even consent, you know, to any other surgeries or any other procedures? And why are they trying to destroy, you know, the nuclear family and delegitimize girls and women in sports and put men in women's locker rooms? I don't know, in women's prisons. It's really very baffling, especially for a Democrat who voted for Biden. And, you know, I was a huge Obama supporter who told my parents, who are Republicans, that if they didn't vote for Obama, then they were voting against my future. So it's really shocking to see how my party has left me.
And that's just one of many voices.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tony, I'm going to answer her question, this lady, okay? And I'm going to say this, that the progressives, and use air quotes here, folks, the progressives in this country, the progressive ideology, and I'd say progressive / cultural Marxist ideology, is twofold, okay? First, they push unlimited individualism. So this explains why they're in favor of transgender manipulation, because they believe and they teach that an individual has absolute control over their own lives, even to the point of denying biology,
right,
if they want to. Okay, and you say, well, that doesn't make any sense. Well, it does if the second thing you believe as a progressive / cultural Marxist is that the experts rule. And whatever the quote-unquote experts say, that is the truth. And therefore, you have to undermine alternative institutions. You have to undermine parental rights, because you can't have parents making decisions for kids if those decisions are contrary to what the quote-unquote experts say. And we saw this, I hate to bring up COVID. Mm-hmm. We saw this during COVID, where people were being told, no, you cannot make a decision for yourself if that individualism contradicts the experts. So what they want is an administrative state run by the so-called experts. And if they have to undermine all the other institutions on the way to that administrative state by using unbridled individualism, that's what they'll do.
Yeah, they want to use, when it is convenient for them, when it is a means to the end that they desire, they will push individualism and liberty, individual liberty, and, you know, the right for each person to choose what to do, what is right in their own eyes, until a certain point when it hits the wall of the ideology of the government that's in charge of the state.
Right.
Then the hammer comes down, and you see that, because the people who were protesting in the Kamala Harris rally, right, they were expressing their free speech, and they were you know, disrupting, obviously, but their ideology, right, they have a right to their beliefs, right, Jesus is Lord, they have a
yeah.
right to profess those, but that is clearly demonstrated when it comes up against the ideology of the state, which if anybody's an empty vessel and is a
right.
figurehead and a puppet of the state, it's Kamala Harris at this
right.
point. It ran right up into it. So what is the immediate message and response they get? You're at the wrong rally.
Yeah.
You know, and we see time and time again where Christians' rights, their right to individualism and their right to liberty is suppressed and squelched at the behest of the state, because it just doesn't line up. Like you mentioned, individualism up to a certain point, when it serves the purpose of the state, they'll push individualism. And that's what you're seeing. It's so crazy to me that it's taken the most radical of issues and just the denial of basic biology to get some of these. And I'm glad they're coming around,
right?
You know, but unfortunately, and sometimes I view it as this, where were you 10 years ago?
Yeah.
You know, you're calling us crazy mm-hmm. for saying that, you know what, this is the next logical step.
Right.
You know, it starts with homosexual marriage, and then it moves on to transgenderism, and now it'll be, you know, the extremes of transgenderism, it'll move on to children. Mm-hmm. We've been saying that this whole time, you know, America.
Like age of consent laws.
Oh, yeah. Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's like, where were you 10 years ago? We would have appreciated you coming around and joining with us then. You know, we probably could have put a stop to it.
And I'll just add this, that part of the reason why people did not understand that 10 years ago, obviously, most normal people are living their lives.
Right.
They're getting married, they're finding jobs, they're having children, they're going to soccer games, okay? So they are not paying as close attention as maybe they should have been. Meanwhile, these people who have nothing else going on in their lives except their radical ideology are constantly infesting the major institutions of our country and taking their ideology with them and co-opting the media, co-opting even corporations, but Hollywood and all these others that we've known about, Madison Avenue, for a long, long time. But and then these normal folks wake up one day and they go, wait, you're telling me what? You're telling me you're at school, you're telling my child that he might be a she, and you're telling me I have no right to know about it? Mm-hmm. That's the rude awakening. But it comes really after 50 years of this infestation of our institutions with a radical ideology.
As we speak, former President Trump is at a round table with Latino leaders in Miami, Florida, trying to share his views and agenda with them. A lot of people on the left want people to believe that Donald Trump is racist. He's anti-Latino, anti-Hispanic, based on his immigration policies. But one Latino that has been a longtime supporter of former President Trump is none other than Bob Unanway of Goya Foods. Remember him? He supported Trump several years ago, and you had people like AOC calling for a boycott of Goya Foods, which is the largest Hispanic food brand out there. But I've got some audio here of Mr. Unanway talking about how there are a lot of Latinos that support Trump based on things like his jobs policy and border policy. Clip 4.
The Latino community is fed up of being exploited, used, and abused on the border and trafficking, with the economy. You know, we're hardworking people, and we're letting people into this country to not just take jobs away and move us into poverty by paying for these people who are not working. But we have an unsafe community. We're not strong around the world, and we're losing this country. There's people who come to this country, risked all for everything, and only to find that it's becoming the land of exploitation.
Listen, what's bizarre to me, but this goes to what we were just talking about, is now, he's the founder of Goya Foods, right?
Yes.
Okay. The largest, would you say, Hispanic-owned food company?
I think it started before Bob. He's a member of the family.
Okay. All right. So the Democratic Party supposedly is all for minority prosperity, but not if you don't toe the line when it comes to political beliefs. Right. Mm-hmm. So you have the president of Goya Foods supporting Donald Trump. All of a sudden, AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, calls for a boycott. Mm-hmm. Okay, why is AOC wanting to destroy and dismantle the success of a Hispanic-owned company? Because, as we were saying, individualism and freedom and minority prosperity is only allowed if you play ball with the power brokers. I forgot about the fact that AOC called for a boycott. And then what conservatives did is they called for a boycott. Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to buy Goya foods.
Right.
It worked.
And it worked.
The party of tolerance is the most intolerant party in America.
Yeah. I just saw, I don't know if it came out today, it was a USA Today Suffolk poll showed that Donald Trump leads Latino voters like 49-38, 49% to 38.
That nationally?
I think nationally, yeah.
Wow. That wouldn't surprise me. The Democratic hold on the Hispanic population, and by the way, folks, we absolutely understand and freely admit the Hispanic and Latino population in the United States is not monolithic.
Right.
I mean, you have people from El Salvador and Mexico and Nicaragua. I mean, there's all sorts of ethnic differences, but this is the way that the media treats Hispanics and Latinos as one group. But there has been a drain away from the Democratic Party going on over the last 7-8 years. So that would not surprise me.
What would you attribute that to? Is it more of the social erosion that the Democratic Party has succumbed to with, for instance, like you mentioned, the transgender ideology, the denial of basic biology? What would you attribute some of that drain to? Is it some of Trump's economic policies?
I think it's both of which. I think it's everything you're talking about. First of all, anyone who comes to this country, perhaps now true asylum seekers who the way we used to judge that is that people are trying to escape political persecution, not just a bad economy.
Cuban-American,
yes, people from Cuba. So I'm going to set those aside. But for the most part, people come to this country to find success.
Mm-hmm.
They want economic success. So I think the Latino population coming from a lot of countries in Latin America that have struggled generation upon generation, lots of inequity in a lot of these countries. They're coming here to succeed, and they recognize when policies are instituted that are going to take them to a economic situation that they escaped from which they escaped. So they're going to recognize that, but it's also two other things. I would say the hostility of the Democratic Party towards religion.
Right.
A lot of these folks coming from Latin America are Catholic or evangelical. They don't like to see Gretchen Whitmer with her Dorito abuse of the Catholic doctrine of the Eucharist and transubstantiation and all those kind of things. That was mockery. They don't like to see that as well. And then it would be the social issues deriving from those religious beliefs. What's the old one of the evangelical Christian leaders, I forget which one it was, said that Latinos are conservatives. They just don't know it yet.
Hmm.
And I think a lot of them are figuring out their values align more with the Republican Party. And I'll tell you this.
That was Ronald Reagan. By the way,
Ronald Reagan said that
Latinos are Republican. They just don't know it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And if I was a Democratic Party, I'd be worried about the same kind of trend happening in the black community over issues like education and school choice.
Yeah, we do have more sound on that once we get past the break. We're too close to it right now. I can't do it justice.
You can't do it justice. Sound on what? Talking about the black community?
Yeah, we have voices from the black community in terms of Trump support.
Now, I'm not naive. I know that at this point, the Democratic Party still has a lock on the black community, but we do see that draining away. And I'm not quite sure, Tony, kind of to answer your question, some of this may be tied to Trump's personality. It's not just his policies, but like black men who like Trump, they see, and maybe a lot of Hispanics, see that kind of machismo, you know, and they just see, listen, this guy's a fighter, and he doesn't care who's taking a swing at him. He's going to fight back. Listen, Italians like that, too.
Yeah, so, that's right.
All right, folks, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, more of today's issues. You're listening to the American Family Radio Network.
Good.
Could the fate of America's children be tied to the fate of our nation? Much like abortionists who end the lives of the unborn, the left is determined to undermine the pro-life movement. First, they target the babies. Then they come for the rest of us. Preborn stands as a beacon of hope for the most defenseless among us, preborn babies. Every day, Preborn's network of clinics rescues, on average, over 200 babies while surrounding expectant mothers with God's love and offering a free ultrasound. Rescuing the miracle of life has never been more crucial as we navigate this time of moral decline in our nation. Will you join Preborn in protecting the least among us? For just $28, you can sponsor an ultrasound and give a mother the chance to choose life, not only for her baby, but for herself. An ultrasound doubles a baby's chance at life. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@AFR.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at AFR.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back, folks, to Today's Issues. I'm Ed Vitagliano, sitting in for Tim Wildman today. I'm joined in studio by Tony Vitagliano and Chris Woodward. All right, Chris, take us to the news.
Well, I teased this going into the break here. We've been playing a lot of clips throughout the morning. I just aired one of Bob Unanway, the head of Goya Foods. His father started the company, by the way, Don Unanway. Bob is the son. It started back in the 1930s. But now we're going to kind of shift gears and go into related sound bites. A lot of people in media and politicians have made a big deal about the need for black men to vote for Kamala Harris. Former President Barack Obama came out in recent weeks on the campaign trail and said we have to have more black men vote for Kamala. It's vitally important that we do that. I've got a bit of audio here from Stacey Abrams. Now, she became a household name a few years ago when she ran the first time against Brian Kemp, who is now the governor of Georgia. And Stacey Abrams begins in this soundbite talking about the need for black men to support Kamala Harris, and then, as she often does, makes it into an issue about race and gender. Clip 5.
Black men are the second strongest cohort of Democratic voters. What we're seeing, though, is that she is showing them due respect by actually speaking to their issues. And those issues differ from other cohorts. I'm not quite certain why there is this panic about black men voting. They vote. In fact, they vote more than their counterparts in any other community for Democrats. However, we do have to acknowledge that there is sexism. There is racism. There are challenges in our electorate, and that's why it's so important that Kamala Harris is going everywhere and talking to everyone.
Now, before we get your reaction to that, I want to play audio from a guy named Bruce Lavelle. He's an Atlanta businessman and Trump supporter, and he was on Fox and Friends this morning responding to these
comments. Is he black?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Clip 6.
The Democrats have been playing the race game. We saw it come down the escalators when President Trump came down the escalators of using the big, bad boogeyman. And it's not going to work. Listen, let me tell you something. As a black man, I'm a business owner here for almost 30 years. You know, made my wealth here in Atlanta. It's been very good to me and my family. And as a black man, I'll tell you, Fox News viewers, that's not the issue. The issue is the failed Democrat Party for many, many years. Most, if not all, Democrat Party policies have been dismal and a failure in the black culture. That's all black culture, not just black men, black women in general.
All right. So let me ask you this, Chris. The sound we heard from Stacey Abrams. Mm-hmm. Did I understand her correctly in explaining why there's some panic about for whom black men are going to be voting in 2 weeks? Mm-hmm. She mentioned the fact that there's, you know, maybe hostility towards women. I guess she's saying black men are misogynistic. But was she implying that black men are also, like, racist?
From what I thought that, too, but upon further review, to use a football season term, it would appear that she's basically trying to make it that all of a sudden we're concerned about black men voting because we're racist, and then she threw that in with, we don't like Kamala Harris because she's a female.
Okay.
Which is ludicrous.
Tony, I'm just gonna say Stacey Abrams. Stacey Abrams is not, she had a failed gubernatorial campaign in 2018. I don't think she's ever admitted that she lost. Okay. I just don't think that she is necessarily a good spokesperson for the black community. I think she has some radical ideas. I consider her to be a race baiter. Okay. But I don't think that that's what's going on with black men. Okay. Now this disparity between who men and women seem to be voting for, at least according to polls. I mean, that's a real gender gap. We were talking about that maybe during the break. I don't think black men are necessarily thinking any differently than white men on this. To me, that's a racist idea. I think that black men want to succeed just like white men do.
Exactly right.
And economic policy is hindering them, and that's what's driving them towards Trump. I think they honestly believe that Donald Trump is their best chance to succeed economically.
That's exactly right. This is a Stacey Abrams in her statement is a perfect representation of the cognitive dissonance that the Democratic Party has from the party itself and those who are ruling over the party and the elite, those at the top, and the everyday average working man. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're a white man or a black man. If you are going to the grocery store and you're trying to provide for your family, you're both looking at the price of groceries.
Right.
You're both looking at the price of gas. You're both trying to find a house to buy. And those things are becoming more and more unaffordable. But it kind of goes back to what we were saying, talking about before. We only want to talk about the individual whenever it suits the ideology of the state, or in this instance, of the party. Nobody, the Democratic Party, doesn't want to think about black men as individuals who have their own concerns, who have their own motivations, who have their own worries. They only want to think of they only want to lump black men, just like they do as Latinos, into a minority group that should get behind the Democrats every time, lock, stock, and barrel. Thank you. So yeah, the sense of individualism goes out the window. It can't possibly, in their minds, it can't possibly be because black men have grown weary of 3.5 years of record inflation, right? It couldn't possibly be that. It has to be something else. And it has to, usually, the blame usually turns to something to do with a racial or an ethnic hierarchy, or even a gender hierarchy, right? It has to turn to something else. It can't possibly be because of dismal policies that have affected black men, just like it has affected white men and everybody else in this country for 3.5 years.
Yeah, and listen, this is the price you pay for identity politics.
Exactly right.
If you're going to play identity politics and divide us up, you are going to find that coalition beginning to disintegrate when individuals think for themselves.
That's right.
Listen, all white people don't vote for Republicans. That's kind of the impression you're left with. If all black people are supposed to vote for the Democratic Party, then who are all white people supposed to vote for? Okay. Well, it doesn't work that way. When the Democratic Party views the quote unquote white population, I hate kind of using these broad brush labels, they try to peel away white voters who think for themselves. But when they turn their focus to the black community, like Joe Biden famously said, if you're not voting for Joe Biden, you ain't black. Well, excuse me, I'm guessing blacks are individuals and they think for themselves too. And listen, I think the future could be bleak for the Democratic Party if they continue with identity politics, because a lot of individual black people are going to want to push for school choice. I mean, black people, by and large, this sounds like I'm painting the whole community, but by and large, they want educational opportunity. They see education as a part of the ladder that allows their kids to climb out and get away from poverty or a lack of opportunity. If Donald Trump wins election, wins the election in 2 weeks, and during his 4 years, pushes for school choice.
Right.
The Democratic Party is going to have a hard time pushing back against that, and they could see more of a drain from the black community.
It just seems like what is drawing people from typically underrepresented groups in the Republican Party, what's drawing them to the Republican Party is this idea of the Republican Party saying, we don't care about any of your externalities, right? Any of your characteristics that the Democrats place far too much emphasis on, like the color of your skin, your gender, you know, where you are socioeconomically. We just care about you as the individual. And we're all, you know, we all want to have prosperity. We all want to have opportunity here. And we want to have an economy that will work for everybody. It's drawing, what's drawing them to that and is that mentality. And to me, that is, you know, it's a reflection, so to speak, of the way the church operates, right?
Right.
I mean, that's what draws people. One of the things that draws people into the kingdom of God is the acceptance and the acceptance of no matter who you are, where you're from, what your background is, neither Greek nor Jew, you know, all are welcome.
And can individually have a relationship with God.
Yeah, can enter
not
the
because
kingdom.
Of your group.
That's right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Anyway. Good.
For the next little segment here, I've got two clips. I'll play one and then call for the other, much like we did just a moment ago. While some current and former Democrats are now siding with Republicans, specifically former President Donald Trump in this election, there are some Republicans that are siding with Kamala Harris. For example, I've got former Representative Liz Cheney yesterday in Wyoming, or I'm sorry, Liz Cheney yesterday at an event featuring Kamala Harris talking about this. Listen to what Liz Cheney has to say this week about Kamala Harris. Clip 7.
I believe that every one of us in this election has a duty and an obligation to do what we know is right for the country, and that's to support Vice President Harris.
Okay, so Liz Cheney wants us to do what's right for the country and support Kamala Harris, whereas just 4 short years ago, Liz Cheney had this to say about Kamala Harris, clip 8.
It's very clear. She is a radical liberal. I do think the American people are going to take a look at this record and realize she is very much a radical liberal.
That's one of the great things about the internet.
Yeah. Well, listen, it seems to me that Liz Cheney, probably for a number of reasons, has gotten her feelings hurt. She protective of her dad. Her dad is kind of on the out with Donald Trump, mm-hmm. with a lot of other establishment Republicans. I think it's not hard for people who are operating according to emotions to set aside. You talked about, Tony, the cognitive dissonance. Liz Cheney would say, okay, I think she's a radical liberal, but Donald Trump is more dangerous to the country. I mean, there's if you're operating according to emotions or past hurts or what have you, there are plenty of ways to explain a contradictory position, explain away a contradictory position like we just heard.
Oh, you know, it's why I love politics and politicians. It's because they're just so open to forgiveness.
Yeah.
Right? No matter what you've said about me in the past, I forgive you of that.
Right.
If it's politically expedient for me to do so.
Yeah.
Just like Joe Biden forgave Kamala Harris for telling him, you know, on the stage for just ripping him up and down about supporting busing, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't that what it was?
Yeah, dude,
it's
racist.
It's all water under the bridge. It's just forgiveness everywhere. And I tell you, it's going to be hard for a lot of Republicans to vote for Donald Trump with a conservative bulwark like Liz Cheney throwing her weight, you know, and all of the 100 people who follow her and viewed their streams, you know. Throwing their weight behind Kamala.
And to be fair, Republicans do this too. And this is why you said politicians. Republicans do this too. I remember George H.W. Bush calling Ronald Reagan's economic plan voodoo economics. And then lo and behold, when the opportunity presented itself, he became the vice president with Ronald Reagan and pushed food economics.
To be fair, J.D. Vance didn't have some great things to say about Trump early on,
true.
Right?
Yeah,
we want to be fair around
Mike
here.
Pence supported Ted Cruz just weeks before Donald Trump picked him to be the running mate. So.
Right. Well, I'll just say this. I don't mind that Liz Cheney has changed her mind. Okay, that does happen. But I don't think many Republicans are going to join her on the anti-Trump train when the question in her mind seems to be what is best for the country. I think a lot of Republicans are making up their own. Liz Cheney has never been very popular amongst conservatives. Neither was her father.
It's all about – it's – sorry to interrupt.
No,
it's all about power for certain people in that sphere. Liz Cheney isn't affected by the cost of groceries or by the cost of housing or by the cost of gas, like we just talked about. They're not affected by it. So in their minds, it's a lot of it is political power. It's motivated by a desire for power, really. That, to me, that's the only reason I can think of somebody who historically was conservative now wanting to throw their weight behind someone who is just a radical Marxist,
because people's money away.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. They're not going to be affected by the policies of the radical Marxist. What all they care about in this instance, in my opinion, is sticking it to Donald Trump as much as possible. They've got an axe to grind, and that's why they're coming out of the woodwork to start supporting Kamala.
And you raise a really good point. And folks, this really does irritate me about politicians. All right. I don't mind if politicians go to Washington, D.C. and make a good living. Okay. I'm not saying that I'm jealous of that. But it seems to me that far too many people, this is not a radical thing. I'm sure most of our listeners agree. It is far too common for people to go up to Washington, D.C. to be career politicians. And then they get filthy rich doing it.
Oh, yeah.
And as a result of that, absolutely cannot comprehend what the people in their district or their state are going through when it comes to economic trouble.
Yeah.
And economic problems. I don't care who you are, okay, on which side of the aisle you are politically.
Right.
That's why I believe if there was a way to constitutionally have term limits, I just think that would be the best thing.
Yes.
You go up there for a couple
Preach
of terms. It. For 7-8, mm-hmm. 4 years, 6 years, 8 years, whatever, and then you're done. Mm-hmm. And you do not get filthy rich. You don't have a spouse who does insider trading. You don't get paid big bucks by these corporate conglomerates who are just putting money into your number one task, which is to get reelected. And then these people leave when they finally retire at 90.
Right.
Okay.
Getting wheeled out.
Going to go home and enjoy time with
either
family.
Either in a coffin
rich.
Or in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that's what it takes to get a lot of them out.
But it's a good point. They don't know what most average people are going through. And it's because a lot of them, I don't want to say all, I'm sure there's a lot of good people up there, but most of them seem to be making a bundle of money. Don't care about the folks that sent them there. Mm-hmm.
Well, as we discussed at length yesterday on the show, which you can listen on AFR.net, go to the podcast section, Democrats claim that Donald Trump serving up French fries and other things at McDonald's was a, quote, staged event. It was all smoke and mirrors. It was a staged event. And I find that interesting because Kamala Harris herself has done many staged events. For example, she's made a big deal out of the fact that Ron DeSantis wouldn't call her to talk about storm response. But she started posting on X all these videos of her talking to some state or local official on the phone. And it just so happens that there was a high-quality camera rolling on the person she was talking to while being recorded on a camera.
Yes. In other words, she wasn't really talking to them?
Correct.
Yeah.
There was also another staged event yesterday. This was at the same thing that featured Liz Cheney. And let me set it up here. It's got an audience. Somebody in the audience asked moderator/journalist Maria Shriver, hey, can I ask Kamala Harris a question? Listen to what Maria Shriver tells this audience member. Clip 9.
You're not, unfortunately. We have some predetermined questions, and hopefully I'll be able to ask some of the questions that might be in your head. I hope so.
That is, by definition, a staged event.
Listen, that's hilarious,
yeah.
Okay? Because it plays to – this is no longer a trope about Kamala Harris. You know, everyone's always saying she does. She can't really handle live interviews. She has one with Bret Baier, and it's a complete disaster. This is why people are wondering about the earrings she's wearing, and is someone feeding answers into her head? She does a town hall. This is a town hall event. The definition of a town hall event is that the people in the town come to the hall and ask questions of the politician. Yeah. And so now they just have prearranged questions. That's not a town hall event. And to Chris's point, it's obviously staged.
It's the town halls for Kamala Harris are pep rallies, right? You have someone stand up to ask a question, and the first thing they say is, "Kamala Harris, I just want to say I love you so much. You know, what's your favorite dish to eat with Doug Inhofe?" Yeah. You know, it's so rich for someone to talk about staging, to accuse Donald Trump of staging, for instance, the shift he worked at McDonald's, because every single one of Kamala Harris's interviews, almost, we all know the ones that weren't staged, but almost every single one of her interviews are the definition of staged.
Well, and the CBS interview, people are suspicious of what CBS did. That's supposed to be a journalistic event. But did CBS edit her answers to make her look not stupid, to make her look more intelligent or more aware of the political intricacies of the question? Listen, obviously what President Trump did at McDonald's was staged. Nobody believes Donald Trump actually works there. He was making a point by dressing up and handing out French fries. He was making a point that he doesn't believe Kamala Harris ever worked at a McDonald's, that she really doesn't care about the middle class, that she had a privileged life, and that Donald Trump cares about the people who work at and eat at McDonald's. That was the point, and good grief, it was brilliant. I saw clips of people in liberal media world saying, admitting it was a brilliant idea.
It wasn't patronizing. Every time Kamala Harris interacts with another human being, it feels like she's patronizing. First of all, it feels like she's uncomfortable talking to a real person. But it feels patronizing. What Donald Trump did at McDonald's didn't feel patronizing. You know, for one thing, he didn't show up and put on the McDonald's shirt, you know, and it's like, "I'm one of you, you know, I'm just like you." He left the tie on. He left, you know, he took his suit coat off and he put on the apron. And that's not patronizing. I don't know, keep going back to that word. It's letting someone know that, you know what, I may be a billionaire, but I can relate to you. I at least understand and want to better understand where you're coming from.
Yeah, because he's balanced budgets. He's had to work through the red tape of government bureaucracies. He understands what a lot of these things are. Now, as we've said on this show, we try to be fair here.
Right.
Where he's not perfect in this. And I was complaining about politicians going to D.C. and becoming wealthy. Well, Donald Trump had a very privileged world into which he was born and was given money, but he succeeded in building businesses.
Yes, and that brings me to this final clip. We can talk about this stuff for the next 2 days, and you're still going to have people saying, well, you know, Trump's still not going to get the female vote. But one female that says she is going to vote for Donald Trump is race car driver Danica Patrick, who this morning on Fox News said this is the first election she has ever voted in, and she is picking for Donald Trump, a man she said is not perfect, but he's the better option. Clip 12.
It feels like voting for Donald Trump is like the vote of reason. It's like the rational, reasonable choice. I feel like most of all, though, what this country could be if he gets into office with all of the amazing, brilliant people that are supporting him, I feel like it could not only be make America great again, but make America greater than it's ever been.
Wow. You know, I saw a clip of a speech from Zachary Levi, who's an actor that I happen to like.
Yeah.
He played Tony, joked when I went to see American Underdog.
Yeah.
Okay, because he played the part of Kurt Warner, who became the Rams quarterback, but basically went from being a stock boy to getting a chance to make it in the NFL.
Right.
So Tony teased me when I went to see it. Did you go see that with me?
I don't think I did.
Okay. He said, oh, your favorite actor playing your favorite quarterback.
He was also the voice of Eugene Fitzherbert in Tangled.
Okay. I didn't know that. But I saw this clip of him. He was speaking at an event, and what he seemed most impressed about or impressed with is the fact that Donald Trump has opened his campaign to Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Tulsi Gabbard, to Elon Musk. And that seemed to have impressed him as an actor. He's pretty well known. He played the part of Shazam, not a big Shazam fan in terms of the movies, but he's pretty well known in Hollywood, Zachary Levi. And he said that the actors, conservative actors in Hollywood, this is the time to speak out. But it's the point we're making here is that he was impressed with Trump reaching out to other people to try to make America prosperous and successful and healthy again. Levi mentioned Make America Healthy Again.
Yes.
For a lot of people, this is a big deal.
That's one of the things that Joe Biden said when he was when he took the oath of office and became president. He said when he announced all of his cabinet members, he wanted to make the cabinet look like America. And he wanted to have a diverse group of people run this agency or this cabinet. There's nothing wrong with that. We are all different skin types and skin colors and types and sizes and whatnot. But the problem is they were all from the same ideological spectrum, which is woke as all get out. And that's why we're in the situation we're in.
Well, our problems are in America are far reaching.
Yeah.
And they run deep.
Right.
And I don't think you can have this chasm between both sides of the political spectrum any longer if you're going to solve any of these problems. You're going to have people willing to cross the ideological line. It doesn't mean you don't stick to your guns when it comes to issues like abortion, but our problems are deep, and you've got to reach out across the aisle, so to speak. So anyway, Chris, thank you.
Thank you.
For your part. Folks, we're going to take a five-minute break for news, and when we come back, Steve Jordahl will be joining us. We'll have more of what's happening. You are listening to Today's Issues. Hope you come back.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.